Okay, so yes, today is the day after Shavuos, or Chag Shavuot, or Chag HaBikurim. I'll just say a couple things. I'll just say a couple things about that, and then we'll start. First is every year I hear somebody saying a Dvar Torah on how the holiday of Shavuot is special because there's no mitzvot on this day. You know, it's only about learning. It's about nothing else. It's only Jews and Torah, and that's it. And every year I keep thinking that maybe they didn't read the Chumash when it calls it Chag HaBikurim, or the Mishnah, or the Gemara, or so on, and they really are mitzvot that are connected to the day, but apparently that has become completely, completely forgotten, which is interesting. There's actually some intrigue to this regarding what the proper reading is on the first day and the second day. There's a Mishnah in Megillah, the Gemara says, there's one thing which makes sense, they flipped it around, but without explaining any of that, there's also a very strange Magen Avraham. Now, the Magen Avraham did something which is unfair. He asked a question where sometimes he asks a good question, and sometimes he asks a bad question. And the Magen Avraham was unaware that his question was actually a bad question. And once you ask somebody a bad question, or you yourself ask a bad question, then you're stuck with it. He asks, he does the math, and he comes to this great realization that according to the math based upon Seder Olam and based upon the Gemara, then the Torah, which was given 50 days after we leave Egypt, so therefore it has to be that it was given actually on the... Actually, he does, if Moshe added a day, it ends up that it was on the 51st day. So he says, then how on the holiday Shavuot could we say, Hayom Yom Matan Torateinu? And everybody quotes this and tries to deal with it and to answer it. The reality is we don't say Hayom Yom Matan, we say Zman Matan Torateinu. And it could very well be that the Zman means, it's more or less Zman Matan Torateinu, but it wouldn't say, it's not Yom. The Magen Avraham's conclusion at the end is that the Torah was given on the second day, and he says, therefore you see the importance of second day Yantiv. That's his conclusion, because he says the Torah was actually given on the second day. Although, yeah, so anybody who's really, you know, probably being over in Baal Tosef by keeping a second day, so at least you have reason to feel better because of this... this comment of the Magen Avraham. Okay. What we have today is Parshat Bahalotcha. So I'm going to start with something which I heard many, many years ago from my father. I hope he doesn't say, what are you talking about? I never said that. But I heard many years ago from my father, which was a lecture which Rabbi Soloveitchik had given, which you can access it, you can find it online. If you can't find it, I could tell you where to find it. It was a lecture that he had given on Parshat Bahalotcha. It was at a dinner for Rabbi Klavan, an RCA dinner. I mean, and we started off the lecture by saying that at first glance, there's a lot of different issues in the Parsha, and he tried to make sense of them all. The main part of the talk was actually revolving around the two nuns in Bahalotcha, which we've spoken about a number of times, which we're not going to talk about today. But what he felt, what Rabbi Soloveitchik had felt, was a really dramatic issue, was the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's response over here to the Mitonanim versus the response that Moshe had, and he said specifically previously, to the sin of the golden calf. We can add as well how he'll respond in the future to the sin of the spies. But let's think about the golden calf for a second. And one thing which is important is the time frame. The Jews leave Egypt on Pesach. Okay, good, that was easy. They leave Egypt on Pesach, Nisan. Within 50 or 51 days, we're receiving the Torah. Another 40 days later, Moshe goes up, which is 90 days, 3 months after leaving Egypt. We're essentially at the point of the sin of the golden calf. So we're 3 months removed from Egypt, we're the sin of the golden calf. Moshe stands up and he really argues with God, and he says a number of interesting things. Among the things he says is, okay, what are the goyim going to say? You know, they're going to say, you can't do this. You know, it's going to cause a chilul Hashem. Forget what they did. You're not allowing the Jews to get Chilul Hashem. And Moshe goes up and really argues dramatically. And the way that Moshe responds here, and again, let's just continue with the time frame. So Moshe receives the second Luchot on Yom Kippur. They build the Mishkan. We get to the second Pesach, so 1 year after leaving Egypt. In the beginning of the second month, 20 days within the second month, that's when they start to travel. Which means, where are we up to at this particular point? We're essentially more or less 1 year removed from the sin of the golden calf. A lot has happened during this year. And Moshe's response to something which seems to be, at first glance, relatively minor. When I say relatively minor, compared to a golden calf, it's relatively minor. With the golden calf, the Jews are guilty of a full-scale sin of idolatry, which, you know, based upon what we had said last week with the whole comparison with the Sota, being compared to cheating on God, they cheated on God. Over here, what's the terrible sin that transpires? They ask for meat. I assume many people did that on Shavuos yesterday, right? They asked for meat. By the way, for young Israeli males, Shavuos is like the greatest holiday because it's a day to make barbecues. I don't know if you do this, if you know about this. Certainly within Sephardim, this is like the greatest thing ever to happen. They don't know much about this cheesecake stuff and any of that. They wanted meat. Now the question is, why is this so bad? But without going into exactly what are the parameters of the sin, which, of course, to be honest, that maybe would provide the answer. But what I'm far more interested in is Moshe's response. If we look in the first source, it says, V'yi'am kimit onanim rab azne Hashem, which means the people are complaining, and God does not like this. It's rab azne Hashem. This is bad. Vayishma Hashem, God hears, vayichar apo, and God is very very angered. Vatever bam esh Hashem v'tochal b'ktzeh machaneh, and a fire comes out. Now there is a question among the commentaries whether this negative episode in Pasuk Aleph is the same one which continues to be described a little bit further in Pasuk Dalid. Va'asaf suf asher b'kirbo hitavu ta'ava, they had this desire. Vayishvu v'yivku gam b'nei Yisrael v'yum mi ya'achlenu basar. And they sit and they cry, who's going to provide us with meat? Zacharnu et hadaga shenochal b'mitzrayim chinam. And they start now to get nostalgic about Egypt, which of course is not a good thing. Et hakishuim, I mean, this is the strangest thing to me. Somebody's nostalgic about kishuim. Avatiach, I can understand, but et hakishuim, how do you translate kishuim? The zucchini, yes. Have you ever heard anybody say, oh, the zucchini we used to eat? I mean, I don't. This is probably really the sin. Still. Have you ever heard anybody wax poetic about zucchini?
No.
Anyway.
Cucumbers,
maybe. A fellow zucchini. Again, it all sounds like side dishes. And then they turn around, or spices, and then they turn around and they complain about what they do have. The problem is the man, the description of the man, how they made it, what it was, and so on. Pasuk Yud. Moshe hears the people crying. Okay, it's one thing, I'd like some zucchini. It's another thing, you just break down and you're like, oh my God, and they, you know, tears are flowing and they want the zucchini and they want the garlic and they, so, no, by the way, you read this and you say to yourself, what in the world is going on? So I'm saying, it could be we have to talk more about the sin itself.
It's because they were eating cream of wheat for the solid year.
Still.
I would cry too.
Still. And then it says, "Vayichar af Hashem ma'od." God is very upset with this. Again, so that's the second time we're told with a couple verses, but it's even worse because before it's "Vayichar apo," "Vayishma Hashem," "Vayichar apo." God was upset. "Vayichar af Hashem ma'od." You know, God's anger burned greatly. "Uveinei Moshe ra," And this was bad in Moshe's eyes. Now again, there are a couple important things to understand the backdrop over here. I really don't want to talk about the sin too much because it's the response which we're about to read, which intrigues me a lot more. According to Chazal, it's really not the kishuim. It's not what it's about. There's one whole approach of Chazal which identified the sin over here as being a sin of what? It's a sin, it's a rebellion against Jewish law. And specifically the law that they rebel against is the law of sexual laws. The reason it says that, or Chazal say it, is that they're very careful about the language over here. It says they cry by their tents. Bochel lemishpachotav, ish lepetach ohalo. It was the tent itself, something about the family, something about limitations which now existed, which they cry about. So therefore it's really not meat that they're crying about, but what one would refer to as a meat market in terms of flesh, but in a really, really negative way. That's one approach to it. Another approach to it is to take it on a more of a literal level, and which is, by the way, an explanation which I'm very sympathetic to. Could be I made it up, but that's why I'm sympathetic. But it's the claim itself has a fallacy to it. It wasn't that they did not have any meat. They had meat. They had meat. The only problem was that the meat that they had at that point was only korbanot. The only kind of meat they were able to eat was holy meat. And that apparently is what bothers them so much. Is that what they want to do instead is they want to kick back, have a 4th of July barbecue, drink some beer, have some ribs on the grill, and not have to worry about holiness in every single thing. I believe that you hear this a little bit later on in the great demagogue Korach when he says that all of the people are holy. Right? I'm kulam kadoshim. So does kulam kadoshim means that everybody is holy or each person is completely holy? The Sforno there says everyone's holy. He says from their toes up to their heads. That there's holiness. This religion is crazy. It tells you how to tie your shoes in the morning. It tells you how to put on your clothes. It tells every single thing. What are you doing to us? And that's Korach's complaint, is that we've become permeated with holiness. If Korach's complaint, as understood by the Sforno, echoes the rebellion which is taking place over here, so then, you know, we can call their bluff. It's not that there's no meat. It's that there's no secular meat. It's not that there's no, right? There's no excuse. Yeah, they can have a korban, but who wants to deal with the korban? Who wants to deal with holiness? And what they've now come to this realization is that there's holiness in every single thing that they do, and they can't do anything which is unholy, and that's something which gets very, very overwhelming. I'll just add one more thing to this before we get to the issue itself. There's a famous Tosfot which quotes a Midrash, which as far as I know has not been located other than Tosfot quoting it. It says that the section over here of the two nuns comes to separate between two negative episodes. So one negative episode is leaving Sinai. The other negative episode is this. So it says, why was leaving Sinai negative? I mean, they had to leave Sinai at some point. So it says rather that how do they leave Sinai? They left as a kid would run away from school when the bell rings. So how do kids run away from school? With a great deal of joy. Which means it's as if the teacher says, and for tomorrow, by the way, think about it. They get there originally for 3 days. They've been stuck there for over a year. They thought they're getting 10 commandments. They had 613 and counting. And they're saying, you know, let's get out of here. I mean, who knows what's next? And it was this exuberance that they had, this total, utter joy in leaving Sinai. I mean, that's the problem. And again, this goes back to my same point about rebelling against the Holy Guild. Can you get me some water, please? It's rebelling against the holiness. They don't want so much holy in their lives. And I think that is a subtext to not just this section, as I said, continuing all the way through the rebellion going through to Korach. But all of that, as I said, is not what I want to focus on. What I want to focus on instead is the remarkable response that Moshe has. So as we've seen, what's basically the story of the Jews in the desert? The story is, thank you, the story is the Jews mess up, Moshe prays, things get fixed, and we march on. That's not what happens over here. If we take a look, we were up to Pasuk Yud. Right? Moshe hears, they're crying. Moshe's upset. God's upset. God's upset. Moshe's upset. Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'yom Moshe El Hashem. Right? Again, the previous verse was V'yichar Af Hashem Ha'od. God is very upset. V'nei Moshe Ram. This is really bad for Moshe also. V'yom Moshe El Hashem. Right. What's the normal? Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Now it's Vayomor Moshe El Hashem. Here Moshe turns around and says, listen. Lama Hariota La'avdecha. Why have you made things so bad for your servant? Vilama lo matzati chein ve'enecha. Why don't you like me at all? Lasum et masa kol ha'am hazeh alai. To put the burden of this entire people upon me. Hanochi hireti et kol ha'am hazeh. Did I give birth to these people? Imanochi al ditihu, right? Am I their mother? Ki tomar elai seitu b'chekecha. And as you're telling me to carry them about in my bosom, kashe yisah omein antayonek. The same way that a nurse would carry around the child that she's nursing, al adama, asher nishbat levotav, you know, all the way up to the land which you've promised. May ayin li basar latet lekol ha'am hazeh. Where in the world am I supposed to get meat to give these people? Ki yivku alai lemar tnu lanu basar v'necheola. Because they're crying asking for meat. Okay, those of you who think that Moshe is getting a little overly dramatic, it's because we've never heard Moshe speak like this before. But that's not the bad part. That was the good part. The bad part, lo uchal anochi levadi laseit et kol ha'am hazeh, ki kaved mimeni. I cannot do this by myself to carry these people that are too heavy for me. By the way, if he stopped right there, that would have been great. And the continuation of this could have been then, I need help. And by the way, is that a terrible thing for a person in a leadership position to say, I cannot do everything, I need help? Is that a bad thing to do? Yes or no? Right? Doesn't make a difference if then it was bad or not, because it's the next pasuk which is disturbing. And you're going to tell me, no, it doesn't mean it. Literally, unless you can dissuade me, look what he says. Pasuk tetvav, v'imkacha at oseli, if this is how you're going to treat me, hargeni naharog, please kill me. Moshe says, just shoot me, ready? Ever wonder where that came from? Moshe says it. Hargeni naharog, please kill me. Imatzati chein be'enecha, if I mean anything to you, please put me out of my misery. Ready? Va'al ereberati, and don't let me go and experience any more negativity. I mean, this is the problem. The problem is how in the world Moshe can act so heroically in the face of the golden calf, and how over here he basically gets suicidal. If you don't like the word suicidal, would you give me a better word?
He's giving up.
He's giving up. He's full of despair. Am I allowed to say depression, or you're not allowed to say depression anymore? Despair is good enough? Hopelessness. He says this. Moshe gives up. And by the way, God's response is, okay, I'll give you someone to help. And then he sends him the elders and so on and so forth. Which, of course, leads us to another question. What happened to the old elders that he had? Where were they the whole time? Which we've spoken about in the past. Yes, but that is British understatement, not as extreme. Because then Moshe said, I can't do this, where we feel Moshe's modesty coming across, and over here Moshe's given up and saying, although he could have said here, I told you I can't do this, but he doesn't say this. He goes much further than that. Does anybody think I'm overstating this when I say that Moshe says, please kill me? Am I overstating that? No, I'm not overstating it. How do you know? Because that's what it says, which means anybody who wants to argue over here is going to have to go and come to some kind of a creative interpretation of the words that he uses. Moshe over here says to God, please kill me. Right? Do you all appreciate that that could be a dangerous prayer to say to God? Right? Please kill me. Enough. So the way that Rabbi Soloveitchik approached this is that he had felt that there is, I want to put it in brisk terms, even though he didn't. I want to put it in brisk terms. There is the act of idolatry, and there's the philosophy idolatry, the ideology of idolatry. There is There's the Heftza of idolatry, and there's the Gavra, who's involved in idolatry, which means idolatry has forms and practices, and idolatry can also permeate the individual's outlook. Rabbi Soloveitchik theorized that, or stated, that when they sinned with the golden calf, Moshe's argument is, what do you want from them? Because here are this young nation, grown up in Egypt, they don't have any frames of reference in terms of how to serve God, so therefore they basically did what idolatry, they did idolatry, but it didn't necessarily permeate their outlook. They did what they were accustomed to do, which means if a person's brought up thinking that prayer looks in a certain way, that's how they're going to pray. So here these people were afraid, didn't know what to do, so therefore they reverted back to an action, but he felt the action was not necessarily the complete personality of the people at the time. Over here, there's something else which is very disturbing. And over here, the phrase which is used is that the people have a ta'ava. Was that the exact word used or no? Hit'avu ta'ava in Pasuk Dalet. Hit'avu ta'ava. What does the word ta'ava mean? And you see it's doubled. What does ta'ava mean? In Hebrew today, you say ta'iva if you go to yeshiva. What's ta'ava? Strong lust. It's lust. It's very strong. Ta'ava. It's people or person who lusts after something. And that's something which is completely overtakes the personality. Which means what scared Moshe here is that a whole year has gone by. And now he comes to this realization. Ta'avas and Pasuk Dalet. He comes to this realization that it's not just the form of idolatry, which they were doing. He realizes that's what they're really all about. That's what makes them tick. And he realizes, and again, this was part of Rabbi Soloveitchik's point in that lecture, he realizes, he has this terrible feeling at this moment that they're not really going straight to Israel. And a couple moments before, he had said to his father-in-law, brother-in-law, depending how you understand that pasuk, that, come, we're going to Israel now. Right? Now we're going. And then he suddenly comes to this realization that to get these people ready to capture the land, settle the land, live the land, to deserve the land, is going to take a lot longer. He doesn't necessarily know through prophetic means about the sending of the spies. One would argue the opposite. He doesn't know exactly what's going to happen. He doesn't know about the 40 years in the desert. But he does know one thing at this point, and what he understands at this point is that these people cannot go into the land of Israel yet. They just can't do it. And that sudden realization that they're very, very far is something which destroys them. That was Rabbi Soloveitchik's argument over here. But I want to go and look at other commentaries and see how they handle it. Yeah.
How much of this do you attribute to the mixed multitude? Because I often hear people say, oh, the Jewish people were pure or wonderful. It was the mixed multitude that caused all the trouble. It was the mixed multitude that was responsible for the building. What's your take on
it? Well, my take on it, here it's stronger than almost any other place, because it says it. Although, on the other hand, when people say it, how do you know who the mixed multitude is, whoever acts like the mixed multitude? So it's sort of circular reasoning. Over here, it really said it. If you take a look at Pasuk Dalet again, the Asaf Suf Asher Bikurbo, so how do you translate Asaf Suf? Asaf Suf, you can translate as riffraff, you can translate as... excuse me? Yeah, va'asaf suf, those added in. Va'asaf suf is not, because this is va'asaf suf asher pigabo, hitavu ta'ava. The asaf suf, the hangers on, if you will, they're the ones who had this ta'ava, right? V'yashuvu v'yivku gam b'nei Yisrael. And also the children of Israel cried. So over here, the rebellion seems to begin coming from outside the Jewish, what I would say is the quote-unquote authentic Jewish camp. So that would be a very good argument in this particular place, stronger than it would be by the golden calf. By the golden calf, what happens is, as God says to Moshe, your people sinned, which anyone knows. God says to Moshe, your people sinned. One second. God says to Moshe, your people sinned. So by saying your people sinned, so then there's a rabbinic interpretation, the people that you chose to take out of Egypt, which is the Erev Rav. Which means that's not based upon a clear shot in the words. Over here it's much clearer than it was over there. So you want to blame the Erev Rav, Excellent. Let's blame the Erev Rav. Let's take a look, as I said, at a couple of rabbinic, midrashic sources. Source number two is a midrash in Tehillim. Kevin Sheshama Moshe Sha'alu Basar. When Moshe heard, they started asking for meat. Halachi Yitzhak HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Le Rebona Shel Olam Basar Hem Mevakshim. He says, God, they're asking for meat. Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tein Lehem. He goes, give them. Which, by the way, right there goes back to what I said. There was meat to give. Give them meat. The only problem is, will they want the meat, which is korbanot or no? Omer lo me'an li basar. He says, hell. He goes, hatzon v'bakar yishchat lahem. I mean, this is not an impossible situation. The continuation, the Medrash says, v'mkach atoseli hargeni na harog. Go ahead and kill me. And you have to notice that the language over here, hargeni na harog, is a little heavy. It could have just said, yeah, hargeni. My hargeni naharog, Amar Moshe fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, im lo atein lahem, if I'm not going to give them, hargino to you, they're going to kill me. V'im adaber kenegdan, hargino to you, and if I speak against them, they're going to kill me. Mikan makam, harogani, harugani, either way, I'm dead. V'vakasha memcha, harog et harug, please kill the person who's already dead, which means, again, the Midrash over here is clearly trying to explain the double use of the word harog in that verse, back in verse Tetvav, Pasuk Tetvav, v'im kach atoseli hargeni na harog, which in English I translate, please kill me, kill me, kill me. I don't know how to translate literally the Hebrew over here, but it's saying, I'm dead either way, you may as well kill me. Shenema hargeni na harog, back in the Midrash, miyad charalo kadosh baruch hu. God got very upset with him. Shenema v'ksiv amei meriva. And that's where the whole Mei Merivah comes in afterwards, which means the way the Midrash and Tehillim takes it, Moshe sees himself in an impossible situation. He turns to God and says, I'm in an impossible situation. There's no way for me to get out of it. Again, it goes back to this point of hopelessness, despair, hopelessness. I do think that using the word suicidal is technically not correct. He's not going to kill himself, but he's praying to God to do the dirty work for him.
Assisted suicide.
And God's not happy with him, according to this Midrash. According to this Midrash, the later sin which will take place with the Mei Merivah is a result of Moshe's behavior over here. Let's take a look at the Sforno, the second part of the Sforno. Hergeni Naharog in source 3. Please appoint somebody else who can lead the people in a better way. So anybody who did hear some kind of an echo of the resistance of Moshe to lead the people at the burning bush, where he says, no, there's better people to lead. That's the way the Sforno seems to understanding it over here, is that these people need a better leader. I am not a good leader. I cannot do it. Which means replace me. That's what he's really saying. Although, let's just think through a second the advantage or the disadvantage of this. To say replace me, you don't have to say kill me. Right? You can say, I can't do this, and therefore get somebody better than do this, but which means the Sforno's interpretation is interesting, but it doesn't necessarily deal with the whole pathos of the of Moshe's speech. Moshe's speech over here is much stronger. Yeah.
But they are the same thing.
Correct. It's certainly part of that larger discussion. It continues over here, Va'al Ereb Ra'ati. What does it mean, al ereb ba'ra'ati? I should not see this negativity that I'm going to have to experience. Bira'at chisron ha-hanaga ha-mesuvevet biglali. It's seeing the lack of leadership because of me. Which means over here, the way this Sforno takes it is completely within the realms of leadership. Moshe sees his leadership. This is very sad. Moshe sees his leadership as a failed leadership, according to this. Moshe says, I can't do it. The people basically deserve a better leader, and therefore remove me. It's worse for me to see this lack of leadership than to die itself, because the people need something better than me. Which, by the way, then again goes back to Moshe's incredible humility by saying that it's not about me, this is about the people. And the people deserve something better. And as long as I'm here, the people are not getting what they deserve. And look, you know, basically what I've done. This is a very nice interpretation, except the words don't say it. Yes, do you all see? 1 second. Do you all see the words that I actually say this? Perfect, yeah, this is perfect. See, that's what an ayin hara is. An ayin hara is when somebody else gives negativity, and then you internalize their negativity. They say you can't do it, which is, oh, look, I can't do it. Only difference is that time has gone by, and it comes to the realization, I can't do it. Although, first of all, I think that you're right, and I alluded to this before, that it would be important to compare the different sections and see what the issues are. There it seems to be much more of a judicial issue. Over here it just seems to be, at least it's education, it's much more of a general approach over here. See, what's interesting about the Sfarno is he is taking this on very human terms. He's being very human over here, and he's turning Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said, listen, Moshe's saying I can't do it because the people need better. Again, to what extent we really see that in the words, I'm leaving this as a question. You look at the Nitziv in Source 14, he goes in a similar approach. Hargoni naharog, biyoti ba'atzmam... Hargoni naharog, biyoti ba'atzmam briyoti ke'ein harag, she'eino machmat choli, v'zem ha'shem tzachin be'inecha, shelo yeli ke'ev lev v'yagon. He's saying is that he's taking it literally. Please kill me because I am experiencing so much pain right now. I am experiencing something which is so bad. And by the way, I do want to go back to the point of depression. It does sound, according to the way that the Sforno is understanding it, is that Moshe is saying that I am in an, it's just everything is black. This is impossible. He's describing Moshe in depression, saying that my existence is so painful. Please kill me to take away the pain that I am experiencing right now. I mean that's something which is unbelievable, because again, we need to be very careful, generally, in giving a psychological analysis of people who, first of all, those of us who are not licensed should be careful giving psychological analysis of anybody. Secondly, we should be careful about giving a psychological analysis of somebody who's been dead for 3,000 years. On top of that, you know, we have very limited scope over here, but it's fascinating. Moshe says the words, please kill me. And any time somebody's saying, I'd prefer death to life, that becomes very interesting. The Nitziv does go so far as to say, of course he wants to die. Why? Because he sees his life is miserable, and he sees the only way out is death, and he sees death as being a release. And as I said, those are very interesting words that he's saying over here. Yeah.
Does anybody else in all cannot say it?
Yeah, we'll come to that. Okay. We'll come to that, yeah.
Well, that's the classic suicide ideation on the
EMR. I mean,
there's no way out.
Another psychologist? Another psychologist? That's what they all say.
But there's no way out. This is my last resort, and I'm unstoppable.
Right, and again, is that what that's what the Nitziv is saying? The Nitziv is saying death is the only release because my existence is just so painful. And he says it, ke'ev levi agon. How do you translate that? Ke'ev levi agon. My depression. Yeah, it's my heartbreaks and my heartbreak and my depression. I am depressed. I am suffering anguish. This is the only way that I can get out of this. Yeah.
If he's reaching out for another alternative,
say, get me someone to help. I don't have to. So you'd put him on meds or no? Not yet. Okay. Okay. I'm just so glad I didn't get into all that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We'll come to that. That's very good. Continue the Nitziv on the top of the next page. Ba'alor ebra ati shehamet mitoch ke'ev lev tzarato kfula sheroeh kama yamim lefnei moto sheyamut b'korev hayamim. He's already having premonitions. I'm going to die soon, and it's basically, please put me out of my misery. Kachem lo tehergeni halo amut mitzar v'yagon va'od ebra ati alkein tov v'lamut ba'od semabrioti. Please kill me while I'm still a little healthier, and before I deteriorate and degenerate and go so much worse psychologically. So first of all, it's fascinating. The Nitziv, again, is on the cusp of modernity. The Nitziv himself died in 1893. If you want to claim, therefore, he has a little bit more of a sensitivity in terms of psychological issues, you can put forth any claim that you want. But he, over here, is saying that Moshe would prefer death to life because he sees how things are going. If you want to look at the words that he's interpreting, it's Hargeni Naharog, please kill me, Va'al Erebra'ati, and let me not see my situation as it gets worse and worse. So over here, he's reading straight in, yeah.
What exactly is the situation? That he feels pain, that he's annoyed with them, or that he can't help them? Is it a mother pain that I can't help, or is it...
Okay, That's fascinating that you use the word a mother pain. So just for I know. Hold on a second. Just for the help of the fathers in the room. How is a mother's pain different from a father's pain? I heard somebody say, somebody told us a couple weeks ago something. They said that a mother can only be as happy as her most miserable child. Yes, a mother can only be as happy as their most miserable child is.
Because the mothers want to fix more than the fathers, I guess, realize how they can only do what they can do. Mothers think that they can fix every problem.
Or they feel guilt if they can't. That's more, they don't really think they can fix everything, but they feel guilt for every problem which exists. They should be able to fix it because you're a mother. They feel the children's pain. Okay. So you just took me way ahead of myself, but there is absolutely 100% in this section, in Moshe's speech, where Moshe used images of being a mother, which means Moshe is definitely connecting to them as a mother would to a child, and that may be the key to how Moshe feels right now, that he feels like a mother. And Moshe feeling like a mother right now, he feels overwhelmed. So any mother who's ever felt overwhelmed, you hear Moshe say, just please shoot me. I mean, that's really what Moshe's saying, is I cannot do this. I cannot do this anymore. Yeah?
Not that I know personally, but mother's association with their children is, this was a part of me, continues to be a part of me. A father never knows that. So that their experience with their own children is always going to be different.
Also retired psychologist. Be careful.
And I heard it from
your Okay. Okay. That's why I wanted her to say, you understand? Because I didn't want her to say these things. I wanted someone else to say, yeah.
As one of the minority men in this group, I still want to add, you said that it is known that women's reaction to a situation is they want to talk about it, and men's reaction is they want to fix it. So to say that women want to fix and men don't want to fix...
No, men want to tell other people how you could have fixed it. Men don't really want to fix it. Well, why don't you just do this and this, and then it would have been solved. It has to do... Look, I don't want to say generally, across the board. What is interesting over here that you can't get away from is that Moshe does speak as a mother. That you can't move away from. There is something over here. See, Rashi spoke about it, and I try to skip over that, Rashi, because I was afraid somebody may take it the wrong way. Maybe we'll come back to it. You know what? I'll let you see the Rashi, but don't do too much with it right now. It's on source 13. V'im kacha atoseli, toshash kochocho Moshe kinekeva. Moshe became like a woman. Now, I would imagine that some people could read this and see this as some kind of a sexist statement that Rashi... It's not a sexist statement. It's what Rashi is saying over... And by the way, it never would have gotten past his three daughters. Okay, let's start with that. But it's not a sexist statement. Rashi is understanding something in terms of Moshe's outlook over here. Toshash kochach Moshe kinekeva sharoka akadosh baruch haparanut shuatid lahavia lehem alzol tamar lefanav v'kein hargoni tchila. That Moshe did have a premonition of the negativity that's going to happen in the future, and Moshe just felt overwhelmed by this because Moshe feels the pain. That's really what it is. Moshe feels the pain that the people are experiencing and will continue to experience, and that's what he feels overwhelming. So this whole side to it that Moshe is speaking or feeling like a mother, it's here in Rashi. It's based upon Chazal. As I said, I was tempted to skip over it, but I do want to touch something else that Rashi does bring up, and something which could perhaps even be more disturbing. It's in source number 5. Va'al ar'ebira'ati, and let me not see my pain. So that's what we saw the Nitziv explaining. Let me not see my pain because my situation is getting worse and worse and worse. I'd rather die relatively healthy than completely deteriorating. Rashi over here says something which some of us may find very disturbing. We'll see in a second how the Sifte Chachamim will nuance it. Va'al erebi ra'ati bira'atam hayalo lichtov. It should have said, let me not see their pain. Let me not see the pain of the people. Bira'atam. Rashi continues and says, Ela shekina hakatuv. The Torah was changed. Be very careful right now. V'zeh echad mitikunei sofrim b'Torah, l'kinui u'l'tikun halashon. This is one of the examples in the Torah where something was fixed and written in a way other than it was originally intended to be. Look at the Siftei Chachamim before you say anything else. Ratzalomar, what does this mean? Kederech Sofrim, the way that when writers, scribes, kishakotvim sfarim magihim otam derech ktivatam. Sometimes when people write, then they edit as they go along writing. Kach tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe kishakatav Torah letaken halashon. He told him, fix the language over here. Which means, according to the way the Siftei Chachamim understood Rashi, this is not a question that we have the wrong text in the Torah. What we do have a question is what Moshe actually said. Did Moshe say, let me not see my pain, or did Moshe let not me see their pain? So which is it that Moshe said? That's the question over here. So that's exactly the point over here when you put the two issues together. Moshe now feeling like a mother. What did we say a couple of moments ago? Here we have Moshe identifying with the people. So therefore, in order to not to misunderstand this, Moshe's pain is the people's pain. Moshe's pain is caused by the people's pain, and therefore bera'atam, their pain, versus Moshe's experience itself. That's the two sides of the coin over here, although now we understand on a deeper level that the two sides of the coin are actually identical. Yeah. 100%. 100%. He's feeling that. But I'm saying that's exactly this point in terms of the Moshe identifying with the people's pain. And that's why the whole language of a mother is being used over here, which is something which we're not used to. And maybe that's why Moshe's... It's not a hysterical response, and I use that word specifically. It's not. It's Moshe's identifying with the people so much that this is overwhelming right now. Right. So Moshe has, again, so maybe we can have more... Okay. Ibn Ezra doesn't like any of this. Source number 7. Hargeni kimo hamitani. Put me to death. Ze aseli b'tzitkadcha. Uvavur pi usay v'zeh tam ve'imatzati chen b'necha v'al e'reh. Od b'rasha niba. The ein tzarech l'tikun ha-sofrim. You don't have to fix anything over here. He's saying, I'm suffering enough. Just read the next one to understand this better, because he's expounding it. The Tor in 8 writes, Hargeni naharog, she'tishlach alai horgim b'cherev, ki tov moti. Send people to kill me. Afilu b'cherev adam, michayei tzar. Inami hargeni naharog, let me skip that. V'al e'reh b'ra'ati, ki pashta tov moti mimashereh atzmi b'ra'a g'dola kezot she'ani ba. Which means that going back to this point, bara'ati versus bara'atam, this becomes actually a major point of contention among the commentaries, is mostly basically selfish, and I'm a little scared to use that word, but that's self-centered over here, dealing with his own, which is really the way that we saw the Netziv take it, and we saw the way, this is where the Ibn Ezra goes as well. It's bara'ati. Moshe's involved in his own feelings over here. And again, if you want to nuance it a little bit nicer, maybe they need a better leader, or is it that Moshe so much identifies with the people over here, and that's where it's coming from? So you see Rashi going, Moshe identifying with Ibn Ezra. It's really an internal struggle which Moshe is having. Of course, you can argue that my distinction over here is artificial, but I don't think the Ibn Ezra felt it was artificial. The Bechor Shorin number 10 and Rabbeinu Bechaye are going to go back to that midrash that we saw in Tehillim. The Medrash in Tehillim, remember it said, you know, I'm a dead man already, because they're going to treat me. So look what the Bechor Shor. Bechor Shor comes again from the time of the Balei HaTosfot. V'al ereh b'ra'ati, ki mutav li lamot biyadcha, v'lo liyot mit nuna v'holech biyadam. He's saying, it's better for me to die from you than just sort of be dragged about, as it were, and to be treated by them the way they're being treated. You know, this is more religiously significant even, that I'd rather die at your hands, God. Look at Rabbeinu Bechaye in 11. Hargeni naharog, yitachen lomar, ki yichfil yirmoz al rishonak, lomar tiyeh, ata harigeni al yadcha, lo ayidei basar vadam. Again, the exact same comment. Better for you to kill me than for someone else to kill me. Ki yamefacheid pen yirgu Yisrael. Well, just one second. That Moshe is frightened that they're going to kill him. Which means... what is it, again, according to this approach, that scares Moshe so much? He has a people who are upset. He has these masters who are mad. They're disgruntled. And Moshe's, according to this, Moshe's saying, they're going to kill me. And God, okay, my mission is over anymore. I am no longer their leader. I'd rather you just take me. rather than then go and kill me. Rabbeinu Bachai continues, where it says, Amar Moshe lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono she'olam, harog et harug. You'll see he's almost quoting Tehillim, but I like the way he quotes it a little bit better. Listen to, because there's one phrase here a little different. Im adaber li Yisrael, you are given to me. If I say anything to them, they're going to kill me. V'im lo e'eseh shlichutcha, et chayev harichga. And if I don't do the mission that you put me here for, then I deserve to be killed by you. L'fichach ben kach u'ben kach, harog ani. Either way, I'm dead. Harog et harug. Please kill the dead man over here. So again, this is slightly different from what we've seen from the others. Right, correct, very good. Once we do go in this approach of the people being murderers, the people killing, then correct, we go back to the whole problem with Chor. Look at the Tzror HaMor number 12. I will just give you a second about the Tzror HaMor. I've quoted him before, but I just want you to see a little bit of his biography. The last paragraph in page number 4, you'll see who he was. Rav Avraham ben Rabbi Yaakov Saba was born in Castile in 1440. He was a disciple of Yitzhak de Leon. He served as a community rabbi. I want you to see the tragedy of his life, and then we'll read his words. In the expulsion of 1492, he emigrated to Portugal. Following expulsion from Portugal, he went to Fez. Two of his sons were kidnapped by Christians and killed. He had to bury his manuscripts on leaving Iberia, mourning both throughout the remainder of his life. Which means he lost his children, he lost his writings. From Morocco, he immigrated to Andrianople, Turkey, where he rewrote some of his books. He's essentially known for his volume Tzror HaMor, homilistic mystic commentary on the Torah. He died aboard a ship on the way to Italy on Erev Yom Kippur, right? His granddaughter was the wife of Rav Yosef Karo. So, you know, but basically, you know, how does this life continue? So then you realize that having Rav Yosef Karo as a great-grandson, so at the end of the day, he wins, but till he gets to that point, it's not so simple. So here's a man who's known some pain himself. So look at source number 12. From Ru Od Ki Lefisha Amar Bekan, Hergeni Naharog, Nigzra Alav Mita. So he says it. That now when he says, please kill me, at that moment he became guilty. Which means this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, as it were. He's saying, please kill me. So God says, okay, which means one has to be very careful with prayers that one says to God. God, please kill me. So God accepted this prayer. And therefore, Moshe's not entering the land of Israel does come back to this according to the Torah. Again, I don't want to overly psychologize and so on, but here's a man who went through a lot of pain in his life. So it's just very interesting how he sees this. Well, Ulechein, b'moshe, afa pisha amar, machinina, lo chashashulo, aval achshav shamar hargenina harog, mitzad hakas, v'torach Yisrael, chotfu hadavar mipiv, benigzera alav gzera. So there's a couple of interesting things that he did here. One is that he says that Moshe saying, please kill me, it comes true. I mean, that's something which we never considered before. Does his prayer get answered in a positive way? The second, well, maybe before it would have. Meaning that there's this ongoing question among the Midrashim and then among the commentaries, and that's what Naomi was, do I have this on Devarim? Do I have a chapter on this or no? You don't even remember anymore. About why Moshe couldn't enter the land of Israel. I have two chapters on this. Next book. Two chapters on this. And there's all kinds of indications about what it was that Moshe may have said or done, where saying, okay, this is why he can't go in. Which means when God speaks to him by the burning bushes, you're going to take the people and bring them to the land of Israel. Moshe never does it. You have to go back and look at the language carefully. So when did it happen that Moshe couldn't go in? Is it really when he hits the rock, or is it there's some direction to take it back to the burning bush when he says, no, I'm not going to leave. God says, fine, you won't do it. I'll get someone else to do it. Which means there are all kinds of different opinions. Over here, what we're seeing the Torah saying is that it came to here. The second thing that he did, which was interesting, is he compared this to Moshe's response to the golden calf, which is where we started. There Moshe said, Mecheni no mi sifrecha, please wipe me out from your book. And what exactly does that mean, wipe me out from the book? And here he's saying that Moshe did the same thing. Although the Torah is saying that when it came to him saying, wipe me out of the book then God didn't listen to him, even though according to the Zohar he did. According to the Zohar, this was the famous question which is brought in by the Baal HaTurim on the Chumash. He says, why is Moshe's name not in Parsha Titzaveh at all? Because it says that Moshe said, Macheni Nami Sifrecha. When did he say, Macheni Nami Sifrecha? He says it by Parsha Kitisa. So therefore, he wiped them out from the previous parsha. So this is the Zohar says it in parsha in Tetzaveh. So Moshe had Mecheini, wipe me out. So he gets wiped out. So by the way, it does bring Rachel into the discussion. Okay, we're going to go to the Mechilta in source 15. I will remind you again that the Mechilta is an ancient source. The Mechilta is the same time as the Mishnah. Mechilta writes, Rabbi Natan Amar, Lo halach yona ela la'abed atzmo biyam sheneamar, what? Okay. Vayomer aleihem sha'uni v'hatileni el hayam. V'chi timtzeha avot v'anevi'im. Hayunonim atzmam al Yisrael. V'moshe mahu omer v'ata im tisa chatatam v'im ayin mecheni nam yisifr chasher katafta. Im kacha atoseli hargeni naharog imatzati chen b'necha v'alor b'ra'ati. So over here, the Mechilta just now drew a line, a very interesting line. First of all, it did what now we realize the source of the Tzur HaMor, by comparing the Mechenina, on the one hand, with Moshe saying, Hargoni, please kill me. Over here we see the Mechilta says the two of them in one breath, right? Just drawing that connection. So as I said, here's an ancient source who already did it, but it brought in another interesting character, and that is a character that upon contemplation was also somewhat suicidal, if you will, and does ask God to kill him. Right? Twice in the beginning of the book, Yonah asked to be, you know, to be killed, and at the end of the book, Yonah asked to be killed. Not a happy book, by the way. Yonah asked to be killed. And over here, the Mechilta draws this direct parallel, although it said something which was fascinating. It said that their reason for doing it, okay, did you catch that in the Mechilta? Right, they did it for the Jewish people. That in some way, this was an act of self-sacrifice. Again, any of you now who want to bring the mother back into it, this is self-sacrifice for the people. This was not a selfish act. Again, I could say that in many cases, somebody who is suicidal, it's the most selfish act in the world. Right? Over here, again, I don't want to take the extreme cases of a spy who has secrets to say and they want to take their secrets to the grave, not to have it taken out of them. They do it for the people. But over here, generally, it's something which is selfish. Over here, the Mechilta just flipped it around, and it says that. And it said again, "Hayu notnim atzmam al Yisrael." They're willing to give themselves off Israel. Again, why does Yonah not want to go? Because he doesn't want these people to be rehabilitated. These people are the enemies of the Jews. These are people he has no interest in whatsoever. Moshe over here, we don't understand exactly. Well, Mecheni na misifrecha is when he turns to God and says, either you forgive them or I'm not playing your games anymore. I don't want to be part of your book anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. So, okay, that we understand. But how is, please kill me, how was that Moshe giving himself up for the people? That's not completely clear to us yet. Excuse me? Okay, perhaps that's one way of looking at it. You see in source 16, the same idea is found in the Midrash Agadah. Kishem shema b'masa ego v'm'ayin macheni na misifrecha l'fi sheyodu Moshe Rabbeinu ki charon af Hashem kasheh v'ein charon af b'li roshem natan nafsho Yisrael v'al re'e b'ra'ati b'ra'atam haya lomer ela shekina hakatuv. Over here you see the Midrash Agadah again draws direct parallel between Moshe saying macheni and Moshe's saying, please kill me. But it doesn't explain it to us clearly. It does by the Mecheni. Sifri Zuta does the same thing in source 17. This is also an ancient source. V'imkacha ta'oseli hageni naharog l'fi shahara kadosh baruch hu l'moshe ha'paranuta atida. We saw someone make reference to this before. He sees what's going to happen. Lavo aleihem ama Moshe hageni naharog imatzati chen b'necha v'al r'e b'ra'ati moshlina tamashal l'madavar domeh l'chad sheyotzei hu uvanav liharog. Amar l'sapokultor, the executioner, riboni hargenit chila anshelot haroget banai. He goes, kill me first, that I don't have to see the death of my children. Now, the person who picks up on this, and this is also, again, completely full of pathos, is the Sefer Esh Kadosh. Do you know who the Esh Kadosh is? Esh Kodesh. Do you know who the Esh Kodosh is? This is the Rebbe Mipiestetsna, who died during the Holocaust. Not only did he die during the Holocaust, he actually wrote a commentary to the Chumash, which survived the war. He wrote it in the middle of a ghetto. Piasechna. So he writes what was he writes the Divrei Torah that he's saying in the with his mayhem and destruction all around. So he writes over here, this is for Sukkot, I believe that on Erev Simchat Torah his son was killed, if I'm not mistaken, and he continues anyway, and he celebrates Simchat Torah, because how can we not celebrate Simchat Torah? It's a holiday, we need to celebrate. Ve'efshar zehu gam nirmaz b'divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel ba'asar rugei malchut hargeni na tchila va'al erev b'mitat chavero. Let me see, let me die first that I don't see my friend's death. Look at what he's quoting. It's source number 19. This is two of the 10 martyrs, as recorded in the Otzer Midrashim. Ba oto higamon lechtoch et rosham shor b'yishmol ben Elisha v'shor Shimon ben Gamliel. Amar lo b'yishmol ben Elisha, Kohen Gadol. So he is the former Kohen Gadol. This is the time of the destruction. He's taken. The time of the Churban, this story takes place. So, Amar lo Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha Kohen Gadol, Chayecha hitchil bi, Shani Kohen Gadol, Uben Kohen Gadol, Mizer Aaron HaKohen, Hargeni tchila ba'al erebi mitat chachamim. Let me be killed first, that I don't see the other rabbis killed. I'd rather die first. Let me be killed first. I don't want to see the death of my colleagues. The murderer, the leader, whoever it was, who calls him a venomous snake or viper. I want you to cast lots. Now, the casting lots over here, first of all, you want to go to Yono, the casting lots, you have the casting lots. But the casting lots itself is by the Sir La Hashem and Sir La Zazel. The casting lots is to turn something into a korban. It is in order to take something and turn it into the scapegoat, as it were, that's going to bring about forgiveness for the people, which means the connotation of this midrash is that by being killed, what's going to happen over here is that they are going to bring about forgiveness for the people. V'nafal ha-goral of Shimon ben Gamliel, miyad pashat of Shimon ben Gamliel at Tzavaro, v'natal astipaktor et acherev v'hitiz et rosho. And that he killed him, but again, it's setting it up that the killing of these people was like a korban, which is, by the way, the reason we read about Lasar Rugei Malchut in the middle of the Avodah on Yom Kippurim. The Shloha Kadosh says as follows: Umizeyit ba'er mash amar Moshe Rabbeinu alav shalom hargeni naharog va'al ereh bira'ati va'amru chazal bira'atam hayalol omer, so that I shouldn't see what's going to happen to them. That's what we already saw in Rashi. So right, the Moshe will see their pain, their suffering. Why is that so bad that I shouldn't see the pain of Israel? That what Moshe was asking was, kill me so I can be the korban. I know that some of you are going to get upset with me now and say, well, this is a Christian idea of somebody dying for someone else's sins and so on. The only ideas in Christianity came either from Judaism or from idolatry, and this one didn't come from idolatry. Over here, according to what the Shlach HaKadosh is saying, is that Moshe is saying, please kill me so that there could be forgiveness for the Jewish people right now. Which means, how did we start today? I started by pointing out Rabbi Soloveitchik, again, I think very, very insightful understanding of the difference of Moshe's response between the golden calf and between Balotcha. What did we find today? We found that there's actually a subtext of commentaries who say, no, Moshe didn't behave differently at all. Moshe behaves exactly the same in the two situations. And how does he behave exactly the same? By saying, Mecheni nami sifrecha, wipe me out. Or by saying, Hargoni, kill me. By saying, no, that's exactly the same response. Nothing has changed over here. This is Moshe, our ultimate leader, turning to God and saying, you've made me leader of this people. So then, if you want me to continue, then these are the terms of me continuing. If not, then I'm not willing to. But we now understand that there is another point over here. Again, there is an irony. The people want meat. What did I say before? They could have had meat. What meat could have they had? They wanted a korban. They didn't want a korban. They didn't want to bring korban out. What does a korban do? It brings people closer to God. So the meat that they're eating now would be something which is holy. They didn't want that holiness. So what's Moshe's response? You don't want to bring a korban. I will be the korban instead. That's what the Shlah is saying. That is what is really coming out of the Otzer Midrashim as well. And maybe even to a certain extent, that's what the Rebbe Mipi Seshna also understood in terms of the Holocaust, as he's sitting there in a ghetto and saying and talking about the deaths that are impending and deaths which are going to take place. Again, which is a very, very frightening thought. Moshe's response over here is the same response. Please kill me. But why? As we saw, there are a whole bunch of commentaries who are willing to look at this on the human sense. Moshe's overwhelmed. Moshe's distraught. Moshe is basically at his wit's end, does not know what to do anymore. Please kill me. I just can't go on anymore. On the other hand, we found those who say, no, that this is Moshe is acting as a leader. And the beginning of that approach we find all the way back in the Mechilta by saying that this is no different from Yonah. This is no different from Yonah saying, God, there are certain missions I do not want to go on because of my love of this people. And then that comparison with Moshe is left out and not exactly explained. But that's what we're finding now in the Shlach Kadosh by saying that Moshe saying, no, I am willing to be the sacrifice for this people. Please kill me for them. And of course, God does not accept. I do love the thing that we did in the middle with Rashi, in terms of Moshe speaking like a mother, Moshe acting like a mother, Moshe feeling like a mother, and therefore Moshe being identified as the mother of his people, which means Moshe's question is, am I their mother? Did I give birth to them? And what's God's response? Yes. Yes, you are. You are their mother, and therefore you're going to carry on, and it's very hard from you, so we'll get you some help. But I'm not letting you out of this. I'll get you some help. You need some help, so fine, you get some help. But you're continuing on. And that's really what God's response is. And maybe that's really the most important part of this whole episode. It's the part that I left out, the next couple of verses, where God says, okay, you can't do this by yourself. Everybody needs help now and again. Even a Moshe Rabbeinu needs help now and again. And that's where we have the elders coming, and Moshe gets the help that he needs. And God is saying, I am not releasing you from your responsibility. And maybe grandstanding and just kill me and so on and I'll die for the people is a wonderful feeling and a wonderful approach. And maybe even mothers feel this way occasionally. But God is saying, no. Continue on. You need help. I'm there. Helping you. But continue on. Right? And that's God's reason. God, I can't do this by myself. God says, fine. I will send you help. Bizrat Hashem, all people feeling despair, will God send them the help that they need and not feel that despair anymore?